Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 165 for August 19th, 2013. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Anger.
I'm Joe Steinkamp, and we're coming to the end of summer, everyone, and that brings such things as going back to school, like PE classes and gym shorts and, oh man, exercise. So much exercise, Jamie.
Going back to the why.
Why it's exercise?
Fun to be at the YMCA.
At the Y, yes.
YMCA.
Oh, I am so not. After last week, I am not going down this karaoke route. You guys go ahead.
No. We were just sort of chatting it. We weren't going to sing it, really.
No.
Just quoting lyrics is all.
Karaoke tickets. Karaoke tickets.
Sorry. If you were at NFB 2013 this year in Orlando, you may have heard the...
Repeatedly. right by the elevator, right by wherever food was. Tickets. Yeah. I jokingly...
Take two steps and be accosted about karaoke.
I jokingly said if I ever win the lottery, I would just walk up to one of these people and say, how much for all your tickets? No, how much? And just throw them up in the air and just...
Well, now that'd be some good exercise. People jumping after the tickets.
Yeah, free tickets. That could help. Or you could do that whole carrot and stick and treadmill and make people run for them.
Yeah. Or you could just not exercise and use the excuse that the treadmill is all touchscreen and you can't figure out how to use it.
There
which is probably part of the reason why Blind Bargains is doing this survey that we are actually talking about in a sort of a, pun intended, roundabout way here. So I haven't taken the survey yet, but I actually intend to, because it would really be nice if somehow, some way, exercise equipment could be a little bit more friendly to blind people, I think.
Yeah, I agree absolutely. I mean, there are so many things, even the most traditional exercise equipment, like a treadmill, you got to find the start button. And there are things that you can set for climb uphill or put it on random so that it just, you'll be going really fast and then slow down for a while and then go fast again. Or you can set it to run until I have burned this number of calories and things like that. So there's a lot more involved than just walking along on the machine. But for the most part, those features are not accessible to blind people, and they haven't been even when treadmills and the like were far less sophisticated. So this is something that hasn't gotten better as the technology itself has improved.
Even if they did something like Chromecast, where you operate it from the tablet via Microsoft.
Yeah, that's
Smart
fine
Glass.
Too, where you have your phone and the little cup holder thing, and you can set things from there. Absolutely.
Great.
That would be totally fine. Or even iPod compatible, you know, so that way you could, you know, run and still get to both things at the same time. Or even Zombie Run integration. No, wait, no, I'm going too far. But
hey, you know, I was on board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if we have that kind of connection, because I think right now what we're seeing in a lot of ways is a lot of blind individuals have been trying to make the iPhone the center of their universe and that every app possibly could run on it, anything and everything. And they're not alone, because sighted people want this as well. And so if it's even to the point where your phone controls dumb objects, and by what I mean by that is your smartphone talks to the dumb object and does most of the work, I would be fine with that if we could get to some kind of, you know, iOS and Android integration.
Agreed.
So, Joe, you finished exercising, and you know you shouldn't play Solara because you need to take a break from that. So you're going to read a book or maybe a magazine or something. Mm. Is there any improvements perhaps to Zoom text that might help with that?
Sorry, you said the word Solara. I'll have to come back here in a second. Let me check gold.
Can't okay. talk, playing.
Checking gold. Okay, all right, good. All right. Well, more on that in mailbag. There's something really interesting that's just released, and that is AI Squared's new version of Zoom Text, version 10.1, not to be confused with the currently available 10.08. And the reason why I make that distinction is that 10.1 is exclusive for Windows 8 machines because it has such wonderful support as touchscreen with magnification, which is something kind of interesting and new for laptops, and desktops as well that actually have the integrated ability to do touch, which is, of course, a major feature of Windows 8. But where I'm getting with this is that it also uses XFont, so some of the clear font technology that AI Squared has. They've gotten that to work, and that is available very, very soon. We have a link here in the show notes that talks about this and so many other features that are available. They do designate that the older version of version 10.08 is for Windows XP, Vista, and Windows 7. So you want to make sure that if you're going to get a new Windows 8 computer, that you want to get Zoom Text 10.1. Your older version will not work. And if you're staying back on Windows 7, you don't have to go run out and get 10.1 just yet because it is forward compatible, not backwards compatible, with your older versions of Windows. And as a Zoom Text user and someone who's been on the beta team for a long time, I'm really excited that this technology is coming out. This is actually, along with the stuff that Jeremy Curry and I talked about with Windows 8.1 and 8.0, not having Zoom Text available, which is my default screen magnification program, is kind of sort of another reason why I didn't jump all over this. And while I have been using Windows 8 now for a while in various ways, I've been doing it completely from screen reading. So as someone who's coming at it from that direction, it was great for testing, especially our products here at Saratech with System Access and all, which works pretty doggone good with Windows 8. I just hadn't really had a good chance to sit down and play with some of the more advanced features in screen magnification. So this is kind of cool. But also remember, Dolphin, as we learned at NFB and ACB conventions this year, also works with screen magnification, just not the font smoothing and some of the other higher end functions that you're going to find in this new version of Zoom Text.
I'm sure most of you are familiar with Apple Viz, and in particular, the Apple Viz Hall of Fame. Lots of people want to be inducted into this particular hall, and Saratech's own iBlink Radio is actually in the Apple Viz Hall of Fame, by the way. This month, though, we don't have one, we don't have two, we have four inductees into the Hall of Fame. Typically, what happens is that you will get two of the sort of must-have apps inducted. But this time, all four of the apps here were just so good and got so much positive feedback that it was clear they really all belonged here. And I have all of these installed on my iOS device. There's Blind Square, the new Kindle app with accessibility, TapTapC. I use this one a lot. What temperature is my thermostat? What is this random box of stuff? So that one's very useful. And then there is the Voice Dream Reader with the a cappella text-to-speech that you can use to read things like Bookshare books and other things. Very, very nicely done to all of these guys being inducted into the Hall of Fame. Well-deserved.
And Jamie, we spoke to Voice Dream on a Triple Click Home, didn't we?
We certainly did. That was a very interesting interview, and I really enjoyed visiting with the gentleman about that and learning, you know, about the development of the app and kind of some insight into what a developer, how they think and what kind of feedback they need, and sometimes their motivation initially for developing an app, and then how that can change as they begin to see how it's used. A lot of developers discover almost by accident. Well, not so much by accident. When blind people contact the developer and say, hey, we're using your app because, and state the reasons. It's a great app. If you could just do these three or four things, it would make it even so much more VO-friendly in the case of the iOS app, or TalkBack-friendly or whatever, or your, you know, System Access-friendly, whatever. And I think that really helps developers to understand who we are, where we're coming from, and what direction they might take to make something more accessible.
Yeah, because I think a lot of times, at least in the kind of advocacy efforts that I've been involved in, we contact the developers and they say, oh, I had never considered that and you're already halfway using it. Well, this is cool. Sure, we'll fix it.
Absolutely. You know, we've been talking a lot about productivity for this whole podcast, including exercise and using Zoom text on Windows 8 and the apps that we've just been talking about. I think as blind people, we know what makes us productive and what makes our lives more valuable and more enjoyable. But sometimes I'm not sure that we stop and broaden out and think about people with other disabilities. We have an article here in our show notes, and you can always go to www.sarotalk.com and check out the show notes. This article suggests that people with disabilities might actually be even more valuable workers or better workers than people who are not disabled. And I think there are some interesting points there. A lot of disabled people don't take a job for granted. And, you know, you can't just go out and just grab any job that comes along. And I think this is a great point to suggest that employees might take a look at a disability, not solely as the reason you'd hire someone, but definitely not anything to be afraid of.
Yeah. And I mean, disabilities influence who we are. And there's no getting around that. And I don't think you can make blanket statements by saying all disabled people do this or that. Right. But as you said, Jamie, we could be more motivated simply because we don't take a job for granted. Or there can sometimes be a feeling of, I have a lot to offer the world. And many people may not see that yet, but I'm very motivated to show that. And so that kind of comes across in productivity and how you behave in an employment situation. The point the article made that I really appreciated was that businesses need to see hiring people with disabilities as a help to their bottom line. Corporate responsibility is a great thing in theory, and it looks great on paper, and people kind of like to pay lip service to it. But bottom line is what's important, and businesses want to say, what's going to make my business more productive or more profitable or what have you? And if you can mention the things about people with disabilities that do affect that bottom line, then it's far more likely that businesses are going to say, oh, okay, I can produce more thingies or I can make more money like this. Sure.
I know a young man who is in the autism spectrum who can absolutely recite lyrics, song titles, probably the publishing company. And his job is to stock CDs at a Hastings music store. Absolutely perfect job for him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And would do it for hours at a time, probably, where someone else would be like, this is boring. I don't want to do this anymore. Whatever. But absolutely a perfect job for him. I believe he even works in the evenings taking care of things, probably when there aren't as many customers. You'll visit with him and he's very sociable, but probably not. His social skills aren't quite as... not going to be as comfortable around people as you and I are. So the job is a perfect fit for him.
The chestnut of workers are more grateful and will stay around is one that we used in rehab a lot. There was a lot of studies that we were able to point to that came before this article, certainly a lot at the Job Accommodation Network. If you want to know more about that, Google JAN or Job Accommodation Network, because there's a lot of companion articles to something like this. And, you know, in my 10 years of Oak Rehab, it was true. It was, you know, very much. But where you had it was you had to find the employer in two or three different ways, in that somebody who had gone and lost their vision on the job, you had a better ability to kind of sort of work them for job retention, as opposed to someone trying to get a job. Then you have to find the sympathetic ear. And the best way to do that was to hit them in the pocketbook. And say, look, you know, this person, once when they are trained, they will know the manual better than you. They will commit it to memory, you know, because that's what we have to do in order sometimes to stay on top of something along with our friends and coworkers. And that helped. So what is being said here in this article hasn't changed. What has changed is the economy. And with the economy has come the employer who doesn't want to take as many risks. And that's kind of one of our bigger problems that we have today. It's not necessarily being qualified. There's a lot of qualified individuals out there. It's not necessarily motivation. It's finding an employer that meets those criteria, that's within your area that you have transportation to, or finding something that allows you to telecommute. Those are some tall orders, but is happening. I mean, we've had friends that we know here on the team that have actually applied for Apple in the tech support sector because Apple is very big into doing support by phone and doing it from your house. So I've seen a couple of people go through that program, and that says a lot because there's an employer who understands these things. There's an employer who has accessibility built in. There's an employer who, you know, is looking for people no matter who they are. But certainly having accessibility experience helps you in that situation. Same with the Apple stores. We've interviewed some people, you know, on all of our shows at some point, except for Android, of course, about working at Apple stores. That's been something that's been opening up to us more and more and more. And it gets one of the bigger issues out of the way of, well, I see her, Ms. Enger, you are disabled. And how do you interact with our stuff? I mean, how can you make a talk? Well,
yeah, there's that. Yeah, or, you know, oh, I see you went to Harvard, which I didn't. But I didn't know they had a special program at Harvard for you guys.
That's people great. Like you. Yes.
But I would like to think that as more and more people are working in Apple stores or very kind of outward-facing public arena type things, or as more and more people get on the train and the bus and such, and they're using their accessible off-the-shelf devices that people automatically recognize, slowly but surely, it's going to seep into people's consciousness that, oh, I saw a blind guy using an iPhone, or I saw a blind guy using an Android device, so they must be able to do that somehow. They're not quite as different or alien as I might have thought before.
And leaning into something that you're already familiar with or that you really like doing, I've been incredibly lucky in that I've been able to find jobs that are kind of already what I was thinking about or doing or was my hobby. In the case of selling Laserdiscs, I was already a Laserdisc fan, so I kind of fell into selling movies. You know, that helps you a great deal, and that's where we come back to being an advocate for something. So if you are a fan of something, you get to know somebody who's really good in that industry. You come in as a fan and work your way up through networking, because remember, in any situation, blind, sighted, whatever, networking is always going to have you at a better position to get a job than coming in cold. And if you already have some type of relationship with the product and you don't have to take as much time to be trained on a product, and you just so happen to be someone who is probably statistically going to stay at the job longer, and by longer I mean like years longer than the average person who will turn over, then that's how you win an employer over in a lot of ways. Because again, it's right back to the pocketbook. What, I don't have to spend another X thousand to retrain another person, and you may actually be the person who trains that next person? Huh, that's actually kind of cool. So again, we're back to advocacy.
One of the really cool things about Sarotech products is just to be able to walk up to a computer and use our stuff. That makes it so nice when you're in an environment like that.
Yeah, because you can come into an environment and you get the age-old question, well, now how do you interact with these computers? Oh, I can show you easily. No, I don't have to whip out my own laptop or something that appears to be specially configured. I can show you right on this machine here.
I don't have to freak out your IT department by installing something. I can just put a yes. thumb drive in here.
So. Well, coming up after the break, you're going to find out about a sea change with Ricky. Jamie's going to come up to the surface. And then we're going to find out just where things can be conducted. All of that and more here on Sarotalk 165.
Are you tired of browsing through thousands of sites just to find the news you want? What about recipes, shopping, radio stations? Wouldn't it be great if there was a single place where you could find all these things and a lot more? There is. Discover Samnet with the widest and most complete content ever assembled for the blind community. And speaking of community, you can use Samnet's voice chat, instant messaging, and users forums to communicate with family, friends, and others who share your interests. To learn more about Samnet, please visit www.serotech.com. That's www.serotech.com. Or call us toll-free at 866-202-0520. We're Serotech, the Accessibility Anywhere people.
Welcome back, everyone, to Serotalk 165. Windows 8.1. Yes, Windows 8.1. Yeah. And there's another one because it's in the month of October. And another one because it's happening on the 18th. We now know the date in which Windows 8.1 will be winging its way across the planet Earth on various tubes and the information highway portals to you right there already having Windows 8. Or if you're buying a new computer, it will come shipped with Windows 8.1, which I've already heard from several manufacturers on their websites that they are about to do so on the week of October 18th. And this will be a free update, so you don't have to worry about anything there. You're going to be able to get it from the Windows Store. Works out to be something like 6 o'clock in the morning because it actually starts in New Zealand at midnight and then works its way across. And it's available all over the world all at one time, unlike the new Xbox One, which won't be. Windows 8.1 brings you all these wonderful things that you've heard us talk about on the podcast before and some other neat things. Can't talk about it just yet. It hasn't gone RTM or off to manufacturing. That happens later this month, so we're still under NDA. But we will definitely cover it as we get closer to launch, and we'll see if we can get Jeremy back in front of the microphones to talk about how things have changed from Windows 8 to 8.1, because that was a very popular segment last year for our convention coverage.
Even though we can't talk about it too much, there are some things that have been discovered and have been made public about Windows 8.1, namely that this is going to have a tutorial and kind of a help mode built into Windows 8.1. And that was one of the huge...
Mary Jo Foley and Paul were all over that on Windows Weekly. They kept saying that was a big part of people not accepting because it was such a change to the way
it was so
Windows.
New, and they never really said, so here's how you use this thing. You know, it was supposed to be, I guess, so intuitive that you just start moving around and things magically happen. But Microsoft has realized,
there's a store over here, and there's the store on the desktop, and then you have this interface over here, and no, that doesn't work over there. And if you open this in Internet Explorer, it might show up over here, but it wouldn't if you hit Windows M and go to the desktop. I'm totally with you on this. And if you're going to address half the stuff that people complained about, that's already a win-win.
And it looks like they're trying. They've done some visual things, too, like if you're hovering over some things, then you may have, you know, the equivalent of an ellipsis or something to say, oh, there are a couple layers under this thing, so you can kind of drill down here. And they've just done some things to make it a little more obvious how to use the OS, which is nice.
It feels very Mac OS X to me. I don't know about you guys, but definitely seems to be that they're taking on the yearly schedule and doing these modifications very mountain lion-ish from lion or leopard to snow leopard. So there's certainly a precedent for that. What do you think, Jamie?
It's interesting. I went to an orientation, a yearly orientation for the college that I teach music appreciation at one night a week. And they were talking about the fact that if you needed to use parts of their site, their online site, you needed to use either Firefox or Chrome because it's not currently working with IE10.
Or
11. And that's what I was thinking. I didn't say it to them. It's like, you haven't seen anything yet, guys. We've talked about it so much, but it hits the mainstream. It's not just those.
Not just for Windows 8 anymore either, because that's coming to Windows 7. So definitely something that we have to look out for. But I don't know. How would you do that, let's say, on a Surface? Would you feel very comfortable wanting to do that, say, on a Surface or, you know, Pro or RT? I'll just give you choices.
Well, apparently Paul Thurrott is not real thrilled. He makes no bones about the fact that Microsoft kind of botched this whole thing from not letting people really have much time to play with it, to, he says, forget the desktop experience on a small tablet. Just don't even do that.
Just give us the Surface Mini, use RT for that, and pretty much nothing else.
Even smaller touch targets, that would be yikes. This is, if you're a Windows Weekly fan, this has been a bone of contention for a year, because what Mary Jo does is she writes all her articles in Notepad, and she's fine on Surface RT. For her, you know, just slapping on a keyboard and writing it all up and then submitting, that's perfectly fine for her. And she's made her case that in her use situations, she's okay with RT, and it's not disappointed her in the slightest. Paul has been more than vocal, so much so that it probably damaged his relationship with Microsoft during the Steven Sinofsky days, just how much he thought that they were going in the wrong direction. And he's been very good about not necessarily saying, I was right. He's just turned into the wind and said, well, you know, furthermore, this is another bunch of reasons of why I thought that this was a bad idea. And Leo has made the point that Excel on a tablet is a great idea, but so hard to do without a mouse. And it gets very visual from there, but they've made some really good points about how do you scale, and Windows not necessarily scaling in the same way that, you know, you can on a Retina. I mean, one of the things that Apple has the ability to do is say, look, if you're going to, as a developer, use these particular features, you kind of sort of got to approach it from this direction, and it's got to be kind of uniform. And if you're going to be in the store, then you better do it. Otherwise, you're just not getting through. Windows doesn't have that because of years and years and years of legacy. And because it's so much bigger, with such a bigger install base, they can't make draconian changes like that. And they can't even do it on the Xbox, as you've seen them retreat from, okay, it's going to be like this. Okay, maybe not. Y'all didn't like that, so we won't do that then. Well, it's going to be like this. Oh, the internet hated that too. Okay, well, no, it's not like that.
So what we meant was...
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what some of Windows 8.1 is doing here. Some people are saying there's a Surface refresh coming. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I would rather have an 8-inch, Jamie. I'm on the same pad with you, though. Yeah. Is if it can scale, which supposedly that's some of the things that are coming in the new 8.1, then having a tablet version of this might necessarily be a better thing. And if certainly if you're stuck on the fence between this and a new computer with touch, and like, what was it? There was an article last week that said that 23% of computers are being bought with touch. The majority of computers are still being bought with Windows 8 and no touch because the consumer doesn't see necessarily value in it.
That's interesting. I know that HP has some stuff where they are doing the sort of hybrid thing, and that's what Paul Thurrott mentions here as what he believes the future to be, whether it's Windows or some other operating system. You have a tablet that can become a laptop, or a laptop that can easily become a tablet, and we're not talking just ultrabooks that might be a little underpowered. You may have, you know, a big powerhouse, but it still has this ability to, here's your giant touch Surface, no pun intended, and then here is you slap it on this body with a keyboard and all your you know, your peripheral connectors and such, and now it's a laptop.
And that, oh, you hit something, dongles. I mean, you got to, on a lot of the ultrabooks and especially Surface, you're going to dongle a lot of things, and some people like that and some people don't. Certainly people with the new Macs, MacBooks, are not huge fans of the need for dongle-y type stuff that are coming along with that. But that's kind of becoming an industry-wide standard, that if you want to have all these extra peripherals, you better daisy chain or buy something that has lots of USB ports on them. And that's why you still see Dell and others offering desktop replacements that don't have touch, because it's still meeting the consumer in the middle. It's giving them all the pieces of the puzzle that they want, but it doesn't necessarily force them to have this touchscreen. But you're going to get this huge trackpad instead that lets you do all the gestures as if you had a touchscreen. So that's kind of weird too, because I've been laptop shopping and I'm just not used to the idea that there isn't a left button and right mouse button. They're touchscreens as if it was an Android phone. And that's kind of freaky too. And I'm hoping that isn't the new paradigm. Other marketing speak, in the future.
Paradigm shift. Glass ceiling.
Pretty much. Because I already had laptops that had speakers like below the keyboard where you would rest your hands, and I hated that. And if there's like a trackpad that's like 5 feet wide below my keyboard, and if I'm getting a full keyboard, if I'm going 15-inch or 17-inch with a numpad, and half of the below is freaking keypad, I don't want to disable it because that can cause lots of problems too. And I know some individuals do that. But to me, I've run into issues like that because there might be a hardware or software looking for it. And then that causes a whole bunch of fun.
But yeah, just do everything on your mobile device. I mean, you can pretty much browse for whatever you want and buy whatever you want, even from Facebook.
78% of people using Facebook mobile. That was a study just recently thrown out there by Facebook. Facebook's starting to open up a little and talk about just how people get to them and what they use and how they use it. Let's see here. I don't know. Your credit card. See, last year, we even talked about it on the program.
Yes, we did.
Facebook was kind of sort of wanting you to spend time and money with them. And they introduced things like gifts, so you could buy gifts and send them to people. That's not all. They want to do things like PayPal. They want to be your next PayPal. And I don't know how I feel about that, because everybody already knows how I feel about Facebook.
I'm not giving up PayPal. I'm just going to say it right here and now.
You know, your relationship with Apple is unique because they have your credit card number. That's a part of iTunes and buying stuff and apps and things like that, unless you're completely going a different way and using nothing but, you know, iTunes gift cards. Google kind of sort of coming the same way now with Android, that they kind of sort of want the ability to have you buy stuff right up front. Microsoft coming to that idea as well. But I don't feel that with Facebook. Facebook didn't start off that way. In fact, Facebook is so in the browser MySpace generation that anything that they try to do here feels just tacked on or Me Too or catch up. And spending more time on Facebook is, of course, against what I believe in anyway, but giving them my payment history as well, when you already won't let me pull anything out of you, No, not doing that.
Sorry, Facebook. I think you need to concentrate on something that is more in your wheelhouse, and this is not it.
Right. That's interesting, because the whole, just among friends, among family, Facebook is the thing that maybe we spend too much time on. That's kind of the perception, or that's the place where negativity can stir up real quickly if you're not careful. There just seems to be something. Even though I use it, my family and friends use it, there's something kind of negative about Facebook in general. And that's something I need to really figure out and fix if possible.
They will, every 6 weeks.
Well, it's not just about the interface, though. Right. I think it's about social networks in general. And you see it with Twitter as well, but it's in a different way. Facebook seems to be the place where you reconnect with old friends, or you kind of keep in touch with family. And Twitter's the thing that you type about what you're doing every day. In any case, it seems like Facebook is just has the potential to be fraught with drama, whether it's you spend too much time on there playing games, or you spend too much time on there chatting with people, or, you know, so-and-so said this, and now the whole family saw it, and it's this big drama thing that lasts for days and days. I don't know what they can do to address that, because people are people, and when you get them together anywhere, things like that will happen.
A couple of months ago, we talked about the ability to send money back and forth in Twitter, and I didn't think that was any smarter idea.
That was kind of creepy.
Yeah, to be fair, Facebook is getting ready to turn Instagram video into ads. And they're going to be interactive ads. So, you know, what they want to be able to do is one-click Amazon and say, hey, did you like that? Buy it right here, kids. And so it is going somewhere. They do have an overall mission and plan. And eventually it's going to come to the mobile Facebook site, because if 78% of the people are using that, then guess what you're going to be able to see really soon. So they do have a master plan. They did turn in a profit. Their stock is back to where it was at initial IPOs. They're getting traction on advertising revenue. So they are turning the ship in the direction that they want to go. I'm just not sure it's where we want to go.
Yeah, there is that. Well, do you remember the days when Facebook, and I think it was about 2 years ago or maybe a year and a half, it hasn't been that long, but Facebook was kind of like, we don't care about mobile. And now they're, oh, we so care about mobile. Yeah, we never said that.
We were always at war with EuroAsia. What are you talking about?
That's right.
Nope, no, don't remember that at all. Double plus good, we're good. No, go ahead.
But they've got to figure out what strategy they're going to take, and it changes constantly as technology and as people's habits change. The same thing is true for BlackBerry. BlackBerry has not died yet, oddly enough, but they're still in trouble, and they've got to figure out something to do. And the whole, no, everything's fine, we're still doing stuff.
Now we're for sale.
People can't, can't keep accepting that.
Well, that article that came out and said exploring possibilities and we're for sale, and then immediately before the end of the day, there was like on Bloomberg and Forbes and six other sites, so here's how much their patents are worth.
Yeah. Wow. And actually they've got some pretty significant patents, and we have an article here that talks about the five things that they could possibly do, including doing nothing, but they could sell off all their patents. They could break things off with hardware division and software division. They can maybe get acquired if anybody happens to still be interested. That could happen.
Apple, you got $147 billion. Why not? You know, help a company out. A little bit of a break.
Come on.
Canada's really close to Cupertino. Wouldn't be that big of a deal, would it?
We could work great together.
Absolutely. Yeah. Good grief. I think I hear Steve Jobs yelling from his grave right now.
Yeah, the Darth Vader style. No.
No. Absolutely. Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, but sometimes these things take on momentum and they just keep sliding down the hill no matter what you do. And a lot of people do like what they did in the Z10 and some of the other phones that have come out. A lot of people like BlackBerry OS 10. And for the fan that is the BlackBerry fan, it was, you know, great for what they were. There's just not enough of those fans to keep things kind of going. Oh, well, it's kind of like a balloon. What goes up must come down, don't you think, Jamie?
Mm-hmm. And momentum, things getting out of control.
Uh-huh. Doesn't sound like anybody else we know with the letters.
Maybe, like LG?
G, yeah.
Yeah. So they sent some coupons up in balloons, and people just kind of rioted, I guess, and ran for them, and ended up hurting and... Did someone actually get killed? I can't recall.
No, luckily it was
20
just
injured.
Yeah,
several injured, right.
Yeah.
But, there was a video associated with the article that we were linking to, and I tried to watch it, but of course it was in South Korea, so none of it is in English. And
ouch is still ouch in any language.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, pretty much. But just people, man, the mob mentality or whatever just can be so crazy. You see this on Black Friday shopping where people, mine, and they'll do whatever to get this thing. And so these helium balloons are floating up, and they didn't get very far because people are all jumping up, mine. And, you know, just pay the couple $100 and get the phone. It's not worth hurting yourself over.
I love the internet being the internet. Someone actually quoted WKRP. I honestly thought turkeys could fly as a caption to that. It was so wrong. And if you remember the classic WKRP situation, you'll get that. If not, Wikipedia is your friend.
Apple is also your friend, or at least they want to be. And we have an article here about why the iPhone 5C might make sense today. There's been this whole discussion, and of course, on TripleClick Home, Buddy says, nope, Apple's not going to do a cheaper iPhone.
Therefore, it's going to happen. It is preordained.
I think it's going to happen. He's always wrong.
No.
So, right.
Okay, Fred, back up these up. I got three pallets coming your way.
But there are some interesting reasons, according to Renee Ritchie here from iMore, as to why this might actually make sense. One of them being Apple doesn't really have a problem cannibalizing products. Mm-mm. And in this case, the iPod just might be going away. So that's one reason. Another that I think is interesting is that the technology to make a smaller, less expensive iPhone that was really good quality hasn't been around very long, but today they could actually pull it off and get away with it. Just a couple of things to think about there. Yeah,
that was pretty cool. And the other thing they talked about was what customers want has actually changed since the market has changed so much. Apple couldn't have done this as kind of a boutique store then, but they can now because what people want has changed and what's already out there has changed. So they can do this and fill a need that may not have really been there before.
There's some other tinfoil-y kind of things involved here too that I'll subscribe to. And one was the older polycarbonate iPhones did not have as many problems as the new metal-ish iPhones in that they were also easier to repair. And they go so far as to say in some of these articles that Renee's talked about on MacBreak Weekly even, that when you dropped your iPhone, the shock that comes to it reverberates throughout the entire unit as opposed to kind of giving way with physics and plastics and polycarbonate. That made a little bit more sense to me as well. In fact, going back to that probably is better if they ever decide to go into wireless charging or something like that. I would also think that colors and having all that ability, you already see with the Moto X that you can customize in all these different colors, and supposedly HTC was thinking the same thing. And both felt like they had to get in front of Apple, because if you remember the iMacs, one of the things that sold them was multicolored iMacs. That's how they got back into the industry to be a player. And, you know, to some respect, the iPad mini is eating the lunch of the larger iPad, but both are also not selling as much as they used to. iPhones are running into a situation where customers are having differential problems in that the 4S is cheaper and just as good as the 5, so why should I get a 5 when they're going to support the 4S with iOS 7? It's just as good, it's cheap, I can deal with that. And so they're dealing with that amongst their own fragmentation. Yeah, I use that word with iDevices because people said, iPad 2, I'm just as good. That's not too terrible from the iPad 4. It's cheaper and I can deal with that. And that's kind of good and bad. So Apple does have some things it has to look at and make some addresses. And gosh, I think that is kind of an issue. And yeah, they have eaten iPods and probably will deprecate them out of the line. I think that's just a reality at some point. But, you know, Macs aren't selling as high as they used to. And, you know, that's not just a PC market thing that PCs are slowing. Mac sales are slowing too. So if the world is moving to everything on a glass slab, how can you make more money? And maybe making a lesser iPhone, and I don't even want to use that term, making a different iPhone that may appeal to a market that can afford it better, especially outside the United States, maybe money on the table, just like the iPad mini they can't walk away from.
Well, as long as it's got Siri, maybe it just doesn't matter. And, you know, Siri was actually developed in Boston, or at least enhanced there. And of course, Nuance is in Boston. And it seems interesting when you look at it. Hey, all these speech recognition people, why are they all in Boston? That's kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
Well, we have an article that kind of explains that. And it's mainly because speech recognition initially started in MIT. So you had all these people looking at how to do speech recognition in the first place and then looking at how to improve it. And they just happened to be at MIT. And while some people did leave that, a lot of the work did continue at MIT. And then companies like Nuance kind of came out of that. And so, yeah, Boston's a place to be if you're looking to study speech recognition or make some improvements.
Silicon Valley of Speech is on the East Coast. Who knew?
I just picture Siri with a Boston accent, and that is, that's the only thing I can focus on in this entire article.
You've given somebody an audio challenge.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I totally want to hear that.
I do too.
Samantha with a Wooster Mass kind of sound.
There you go.
Get in the car and turn left.
I want to play with iOS 7. That's what I want to
play. Oh, you're going to get your
and
wish.
Apparently, yeah, soon. I'm going to get my wish soon.
September 10th.
The rumored date, absolutely. And that's probably going to be correct. It's a Tuesday, which is typical, the right time when they generally do this thing in the fall.
Beta 6 out at the time of this recording. That usually starts to point all sundials to the idea that it's right around the corner.
We have an article with someone who's played with iOS 7 for a month and loves it. Actually says, you know, they've just done a lot of things that make sense. They've put some things in easier to find places. We all know about the aesthetic changes. And this person is sold. He thinks it's going to be a hit when it's all said and done. So I suspect that's probably true. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I'm excited about it too, for things like finally you can turn off Bluetooth easily and finally you can get to some of these things easier without, okay, settings, now here, now there, yeah, now that, now I can do what I want.
Rumors are true about a new chip in the new iPhone. I'm more interested in how well that hardware runs with the new software and how that runs with the older stuff. I mean, we all know how great the current software is with the 3GS, which is supported. So I think that's a bigger issue for, in my mind, is if you're sitting back and you're holding back, or you just renewed your contract, or you bought one of those three, you know, fours or four, not four S's. If you bought a four on a contract, does this give you the need or the desire or the ability to say when you upgrade, wow, this runs so much better? Because that's what Apple is really good at, right? Is making you feel like the thing you have is a brick. And then when you get this new hardware with this optimized software, you fall in love all over again. And that's what I think is interesting. Beyond all these other things, which I think were totally needed, you know, does this then make you do what I just said a minute ago? Not buy the cheaper iPhone, the 4S. You want the 5S. I mean, that's...
Really, I don't know. I mean, people are beta testing this on hardware that exists now, not what's coming in the future. And granted, the faster hardware is probably going to be better because, well, it's faster, you know, better processor, et cetera. But I don't think that it can be so dramatic, given that, again, people are testing this beta on current hardware. And if it were horrible on that current hardware, we'd hear about it.
Right. Ricky's on the 5. Jamie, you're on an older one. So
I'm on the 4S.
We will decide this later.
Yes, we will.
Somebody upgrades.
We will report back to you.
Oh, big surprise. Older hardware starts being slower with new software. Who saw that coming?
Yeah. Certainly not people who had a Nexus 7.
I don't even intend to try to talk my wife into updating her 4. I'm not even going to mention it to her. Just leave it alone. Leave it on 6.
If she never has to think about it, she'll never notice anything.
That's and Jamie exactly comes in, right. He goes, well, I sold mine to Gazelle, and I used her upgrade. So anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting that divorce, and...
I only have to wait till December, so I think I can survive.
You can hold out. Okay.
Well, there you go.
Besides, they're going to be backordered until February anyway. So
in December, you know, on Triple Click Home, if somebody doesn't beat him to it on the team, and right. We'll always be able to know more when Pete Bosley gets it. He'll tell us all on Twitter.
Yeah. Yes.
As Pete gets all the toys.
Well, coming up after the break, the mailbag, listening to music through your mouth. Yes, that's what I just said. And going to the drive-in, right here on the Sarah Talk podcast.
7,000 high school students drop out every school day. That's one every 26 seconds. So here's a 26-second message of encouragement.
Hi, I'm Stacy. Look, you know, I've been there. It's tough. And I just want to say, if you find yourself feeling negative, use it as motivation. Let it be like the fuel in the fire to keep you going. Because the best is yet to come. Seriously, you're capable of great things. Things you probably haven't even dreamed of yet. So don't quit now. See you at graduation.
Do you have 26 seconds to convince a student to stay at their desk? Now you can share your message of support at boostup.org. We can keep students in school. visit boostup.org and take the first step. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
No. Sorry. Try again.
Oh, I don't know how to use this Apple thing. The only thing I know how to do with it is...
Wait, there's lots more to learn, and Mac for the Blind can teach you. As an Apple-certified support professional in Lion and Mountain Lion, with 8 years' experience on Mac and 4 years' experience on iOS, TripleClick Home's own John Panarese has what it takes to get you comfortable and productive with all your Apple gadgets. Training packages are available for both Mac and iDevices. When you're ready to take a taste of all that your Apple can do, visit www.macfortheblind.com to get started.
MacfortheBlind.com.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk Podcast 165, and we're going to launch Ricky and the mailbag basket up in a balloon. Hang on, Ricky, here you go.
Okay, somebody catch me and pull the balloon down. There are iTunes gift cards attached to it. Hurry, catch it.
I thought you were going to say the magic letters, LG.
I was going to say, Duck, no, Joe, she's coming chance. Down fast.
What, check Solara gold? I missed what you said. Sorry about that. Sorry. Butterfingers. Sorry.
Yeah, well, you know, speaking of checking Solara gold, we actually have an iReport related to that, maybe just a bit.
Hi there. This is Jim in Boston. And just listened to episode 164 of the Serotalk podcast and had a comment and a question for Mr. Joe. My comment is this. You ever watch that episode of Star Trek Next Generation? I think it's called The Game, where somebody brings back this visor game from Ryza and they're all like addicted to it. And one particular scene, like Wesley Crusher, like wrestling his mother. And it's a very interesting episode. That kind of sounds like what's happening with you with this game that you're playing and episode you're 44 and level 44. And that kind of sounds like what's going on with that. So I'm actually I don't know if I even want to get into that game because of it sounds so very, very addicting. Oh, if you're all gold and I'm waiting to get gold and it's just. Anyway, so stay away from the game. Stay away from the game. And my question is this. That commercial you guys played for government savings bonds and things like that, and somebody says, feed the pig. Joe, is that you singing that? That's my question. Have a good one. Keep up a great podcast.
So I listened to this a couple of times and laughed both times. Now, we'll have to answer the question as to whether Joe does, in fact, sing Feed the Pig in just a bit. But I got to say that... that hit a little too close to home with the Star Trek The Next Generation episode. And, you know, everybody's addicted to the game.
Especially
and
since
around
it's
this
spread across
device.
The crew.
Yes.
Look what I brought back from Risa. Oh, everybody, let's play. And Yeah,
a little too close to home. I don't want to talk about
catch.
That.
So that was very cool.
Do you sing Feed the Pig?
No, I'm afraid not. I know I have made some bad singing references lately, especially in the last month or so. But no, I do not. Those actually come from the Ad Council. Some of them are actually a couple of years old. And we are members of that organization through PSA. And you can get some of those. And Jamie and I have a whole repertoire full of those things. I don't even know if I could hit that high. I'll have to practice. We'll have to see.
At home, yes.
We'll have someone step on your toes or something while you're doing it so you can...
Just to see if I can go that high. And then if I can go that high, then there's a whole bunch of hair metal bands I'll be able to then imitate, which is great.
There you go. Yeah, you could be like that guy from... I was thinking of much older hair bands like Steelheart and Slaughter and a few of those.
Fly for the Angels. Yeah, I could. Right.
Not Fly to the Angels. But yeah, I'm not an expert on hair metal or anything like that.
No,
moving
no, no.
quickly onward. No, thank you, Jim.
What I was doing was moving into Shinedown. So that was my fault. I mixed it.
Okay.
But I am a huge gamer, used to sell video games, have several video game consoles in my closet. So if that helps you understand, when I find a game, I must wrestle it down to the very ground and level 47. Just saying.
There you go. Be afraid. Be very afraid. If you pick up that iPod or that iPhone and install this thing, That might be it for you for a while.
I voted for them on Apple Viz Hall of Fame.
Indeed.
Multiple times. No. Yes. Five or six
browsers. I don't think that's allowed. Nope.
Oops.
Maybe next time.
Yes. Up next, from the nostalgia department, we have an iReport from Jan Brown talking about an interesting little watch.
Hi, this is Jan Brown. Great podcast, as usual. When I lived in Maine, I worked for state rehab and got my first talking watch sometime in the 80s. And it wasn't a very good talking watch, or mine wasn't, and it had a mental breakdown, and all it would say was, it's, and I couldn't shut it up, so I stuck it in a crock thing that I used to make big beans in. No beans in there, just I wanted to shut it up, and that was the only place I could figure to put it. So it just ran down its battery, and it gave its life saying, it's, bye-bye.
I could totally relate to this. Putting the watch somewhere like inside something buried because it just keeps going off and you can't stop it. So you kind of have to hide it somewhere so you don't have to think about it anymore.
Is it just because you have a split level purse or laptop bag?
No, it would be hidden somewhere in the house, maybe in the attic.
That's even worse.
It's buried in stuffed animals or something. Because if it keeps going up, the rooster, you know, over time gets so much lower pitched. And, it sounds
just keep ignoring
very
it, kids.
Creepy,
it'll go
actually.
Away.
It's 10:14 a.m.
Yes. Or you have one of those batteries that lasts for 9 years
exactly.
straight.
Exactly. I was thinking those Duracell extra batteries.
And you can't open the thing up to take it out. Yeah.
I had a friend who in the 80s in high school had the thing where he was the classic person who couldn't remember where he put his keys down. And he had this thing like the clapper. So if you clapped, it would beep. And yeah, my friends and I took the battery out. And we enjoyed very much. Watching him walk around the room clapping, you know, trying to get the thing to beep. And after about the 16th time, we were kind of like, quick, get some fish. He's like a seal.
Oh, my. Well, last but certainly not least, we have not so much a letter, but a conversation, actually. We spoke about the science wraps in last week's roundabout. And I mentioned something about looking for a word that would rhyme with mitochondria. So Buddy Brandon and I started talking about mitochondria, and we decided that, yes, that is, in fact, our favorite organelle. And there's a band who agrees with us. So in the show notes, we're going to provide you with a link to a live version of a song by a band called Those Who Dig. They were in Austin. And they sing a song about mitochondria. Yes, indeed. So if you want to go listen to a song about the little bitty powerhouse, you can do that. Keep in mind, this is a live version. There is a studio version as well. And if you're interested, you can look for that. I think it's still available for purchase from this band. So yeah, there you go. Cool science music for you.
As always, thanks for your feedback this week. Leave an iReport on iBlink Radio using your iOS or Android device. Send us an email, resources@sarahtalk.com. Go to our show notes at www.sarahtalk.com and leave a blog comment while you're there. Go to iTunes and subscribe to the podcast from there and rate and leave a comment about the show from there. It's time now for Roundabout. Well, just when you thought you had found every possible use for bone conduction technology, we have yet one more. Children can now listen to music through their toothbrush. Yep, you heard me correctly. As they're brushing their teeth, they can listen to their favorite children's song. This just scares me. I don't
I want to know what this sounds like, if it's all like, you know, hollow because it's echoing off your cheeks and stuff.
You know, people get fillings removed so they don't pick up radio stations, and now you just want to shove it right on in there. What was the pitch meeting for this? Okay, Bob, I got this idea.
Well, you know, kids hate brushing their teeth, and I know a way that we can make it better. Mm. We play One Direction and Justin Bieber, and all will be well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just what the world needs. Thank you.
There are vines out there of girls accidentally burning themselves because they're singing to their curling iron.
It's like, oops. Yeah.
So I just, you know, don't bite down on
this. I wanted to hear
this.
That song again, so I brushed my teeth 18 times in a row, and well...
I now have grooves in my teeth. The dentist says to stop.
Mrs. Jones, yes. We have to talk about your son taking off his enamel and...
he just likes that One Direction song so much.
Weird. Just totally
yeah.
Weird. Wow. Huh. Wouldn't have thought that. Now, but you know what that makes me think of is in school they gave us... there was the Crest Cavity Creeps, and they used to have a thing that they gave out to school children where you ate these little pellets. And then you brushed your teeth, and then you went and showed your parents how well you could brush your teeth because it would show you where you missed.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? Uh-huh. Yeah. So maybe that would work if you put on something like, I don't know, La Vida Strontiaga by Rush. That'll take about, you know, 20 minutes to get through. Or some good concerto that will take, you know, the whole, what was it? The
nice, yeah.
Reason why CDs were 72 minutes was because the chairman of Sony happened to like one particular, I think it was Beethoven, maybe? I'll have to double check.
I believe that's correct.
Yeah, so it was that was as long as it was going to be. It needed to fit, data needed to fit that to be able for him to hear it start to finish with not flipping the disc over. So 72 minutes of symphony, maybe? Yeah. That would work.
Mm, why not?
Yeah. Couldn't hear the passages very quietly, though, but you know.
No, that'd be tough. It's going to sound great in your mouth. I mean, again, it's got to sound all just hollow and weird.
Yeah.
It's going to sound great in your mouth is a podcast title. I'm calling it right here.
All right.
Right now. Got it.
One less thing off our plate for next week.
One less. Yeah.
Gonna sound great in your mouth. Just wait till Samantha says that in iBlink Radio, everybody. Available on iOS and Android.
People just have to, listeners, we appreciate you for, you know, bearing with us in these titles. And I know that you have to wonder before you hear that, what could have possibly made them say that.
Yeah.
And maybe you listen just for that.
Why did they choose that one?
Should see the ones we threw out.
One of these days on Twitter, we'll just start telling you guys and other alternate titles were.
That would actually be fun to do.
That people would be very scared of the ones we come up with. I'd also be scared if I was in the drive-in. I love going to the Showboat Drive-In, which is not too far away from my house. And I adore, you know, not having that big squawk box thing on the side of you used to put on the side of your window.
That's all I remember about drive-ins.
And that only one person really got to hear it really well, really loud, and the rest of the car.
Yes.
What'd he say? What'd he say? Now, you know, at a lot of these drive-ins, it's FM radio and great stereo. If you've got a good car stereo, it's almost better than some theaters. And I go to these places, and one of the things I noticed at the Showboat recently was that they actually showed a big digital projector spot. So they actually were letting you know that this was in digital. Because it seems like some of the older technology, especially for some of these smaller town theaters and drive-ins, is going away.
And a lot of money to convert to digital, like a couple hundred thousand dollars or so. It's like buying a new theater almost or something, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of money.
Yeah, a lot of them just can't do it.
Right.
So much of the film technology has gone away, and Kodak with killing off Kodachrome, and I mean, just the technology isn't there anymore, and it's so much better for them to do digital secure versions that can be piped down via satellite or come through a specific way and sits on these gigantic hard drives, and you know, that's the way a lot of theaters are being able to do it. Plus, you don't get the...
You're going to be able to get... You're going to be able to get a cleaner sound and a better picture, and you can show it over and over and over again.
So, I mean, there's a technological reason for wanting to do this, especially from the distribution situation. You could even send out files that will self-terminate. So, you know that they don't have the film anymore when you're ready to put that out on DVD. But yeah, there's a small town theater in a town where my parents live, and they're facing this very issue. It's actually a friend of my cousin's. And they're running into this where they won't be able to get newer movies as fast because either the film is being used by another theater and they didn't bid high enough to get it, or it's just not going to be available in analog format. You're going to have to get digital, and it does cost a lot. So in some cases, you know, that means the local drive-in sadly will go away. And there's just some things I like about the drive-in, and it's just a neat experience. Plus, you can take your pet, which is kind of neat too.
Yeah.
Sticky floors are your problem if they're sticky in your car, not at the theater where you might want to take a guide and then have to take the guide for a bath afterwards. And
ugh. Yeah, no.
Yeah, that made you shudder almost as much as music from your mouth. That almost. Good night, everybody. I'll be here all week. Tip your waitresses.
Well, now I don't have to brush my dog. All his fur got torn off when he got up from the floor.
Oh. Now it's a hairless. Who knew?
Yes.
Roll around. Let's get you
hypoallergenic.
Even. Exactly. The left side. Now I gotta do the right. Lay on the right side.
Well, one thing is for certain, your pets will stay clean and your service animals while they listen to this podcast with you. We appreciate you sticking around for the whole thing. We've got some things coming up in the next few weeks, some interviews, some demos, that sort of thing that we're going to place in the podcast, as well as our banter. Because as much as you love us, and we know you do, there are other things that you will enjoy hearing as well, we promise. Patrick's going to tell you how to get a hold of us. Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.